Welcome to DubLab's new series exploring progressive music minds and communities in Tel Aviv and the MENA region.
First of all, hello, Liraz, and welcome to the podcast.
Hello.
Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you. I'm very happy to join you today.
I wanted to start by talking a little bit about your first album, Naz. And I wanted to talk about the sound of that record. You are based in Tel Aviv, Israel, but you've cited, among other influences, pop music made in Iran in the 70s as one of your influences. And for instance, there's a singer named Gugush who is legendary and whose career was sort of peaking in the 1970s when it was, obviously life in Iran changed a lot after the revolution in 1978 and 1979. And that, the reality for singers such as her changed very starkly. But we'll talk a little bit about that, and I want to get your perspective. But this music sort of overall is characterized by powerful vocals, these sort of singing strings, funky backbeat. When did you discover this music for the first time?
You're not going to believe that, but I've discovered this music 11 or 12 years ago in the streets of Los Angeles, which we all call her Teherangeles, because I guess someone once told me there is a million Iranian people in Los Angeles. I was back and forth Tel Aviv and Los Angeles for about 2 years. I've been working in the film industry, and because I'm also an actress, and I was auditioning and shooting movies, and my career started to go there in Hollywood and in New York, and it was fun, but there was a point that I was asking myself if I should keep doing what I'm doing or should I stop and just start singing, because it was my dream and I had already two albums in Hebrew. And what I did is that I found out that I'm standing on a very pure, how can I say it? For me, Los Angeles is very close to Iran that I cannot visit, unfortunately.
Mm, I see.
There are two cities. It's Los Angeles and Istanbul, which is pretty similar, I guess, to Tehran. And all my life, I wanted to go and to explore my roots in everywhere I can. And Los Angeles seems to be very close to what I wanted to know more. So I found out there are great restaurants and great ice cream and great music as well. So I explored every street of the Iranian part of Los Angeles, and I found that there are great music stores. And I got back each time to Tel Aviv with suitcases full of CDs and vinyls. And I collected the music of the pre-revolution, and I didn't know why. It was the 70s, and after a while I got it. It's a circle that I'm closing, because my family, they escaped Iran at the end of the 60s and the beginning of the 70s. And what I know of Iran is the beautiful Iran, the culture, the talented people, the time that Iran was free. The minute my parents understood that they cannot live in Iran anymore because they are Jewish, and it's very hard for them to grow up there. They left, and everything I know about Iran is up until the 70s. More information that I got is from the television when I saw crazy extreme people talking and screaming, and it was too much for me. So I kind of deleted my identity of being Iranian in Israel. And my parents as well, they struggled to be Israeli when Israel was a new country. So I understood that I built with many layers, and one of them is with a big question mark of who am I. And when I spent time in Los Angeles, I understood this is the place to explore. And I left everything. I stopped going to auditions, and the only thing that was matter to me is to sing in Farsi. And it sounds crazy, but I felt like someone just sent me this little baby and told me, hey, little Az, go and raise this baby, sing for her your mother language, sing for her Iranian songs. And then I understood that the music that I've collected, it's the music of these talented, courageous singers who didn't stop after the revolution, because as we know today, Iranian women cannot sing. And most of those talented singers like Gugush had to stop their beautiful career and move to other countries. Apparently, the singers that I really liked and felt very attached with were the singers that actually didn't stop singing. They just moved to other countries and keep writing and singing. And I felt something strange in their voices. I felt their courage, their sassy. The sound is much more sassy and not polite.
Right.
And I kind of fell in love with those songs, and I said that, hey, I need to build my layers in this music, inside the music, and to sing it, no matter what other people will think in Israel or in the world. I don't care.
So one of the songs on Naz is called Hala Bavar.
Yeah.
And this was a song that was recorded by Gugush in the 70s. Mm-hmm. And your version maintains the same kind of mood while updating the instrumentation, which we'll talk about too. But what was it about this song that made you want to sing it?
First of all, I'm really in love with the singer Gugush, who actually based in the U.S. and has a mesmerizing career. I'm following her a lot. Mm-hmm. And I'm kind of shocked each time I see her performance, because she's an actress. She's an actress and a singer, and she didn't kept doing what she loved to do. You know, she's very courageous and she respects herself. Even though she's been through the revolution and she had to stop singing for a while, I admire her. That's first of all. And this song, I cannot explain the feeling that I got when I first heard this song. It's the same feeling that people who see my concerts and listen to my concert feel. I can see their faces actually getting the same expression that I have when I listen to this a song and I sing this song. It's about a woman who sings that her sorrow and her doubts about life is coming when the dark is coming, when the sun is going away. And she's asking, is it true or not what happening is now? And if the morning, when he'll come, he'll take all this sorrow and all these thoughts and all these questions, which is very hard, she's imagining Iranian people, they write very metaphoric. Mm. So she's asking if the walls are going to break down and she will see the future or not. It's always a question. And the craziest thing is that, you know, around the world when I perform, there might be Iranian people in the crowd, but they will be like, I don't know, 1% from the crowd. And people do not understand the lyrics, but they understand the music, which is crazy. Because I think when I just finished the tour, the summer tour, I understood how music can be sang and listening in the same way that everything can happen. I mean, no language, no, you know, they don't know me, I don't know them. I just felt that I'm, you know, in my living room and they're my, I'm hosting them.
And I wanted to ask you too, I mean, you mentioned that, I mean, this song is in Farsi, and you mentioned that the whole album is full of songs that you sing in Farsi. And I think you'd said that from the beginning, your intent was to sing an album in Farsi. As someone who is based in Israel, does that reflect a choice about who you're speaking to? Or, you know, was it a decision that had any bearing on what you perceived the audience for this music to be?
You know, it's a very good question, because when I first told even my family, my parents, that I'm going to sing in Farsi, they were like, oh, Liraz, what is going on with you? Are you crazy? And for me, it was so natural to build myself that way, because there was no question that I'm going to raise this baby and you know, sing for her. And the audience here and the people who knows me here, I was a bit afraid of what they will say and if I can, you know, book shows and if they will come, because everything went so well in my career. It was a really, when I think about it now, it's a crazy step. But for me, it was no doubt that this is what I'm going to do. And this is like a mission for me. And my biggest dream was to write new songs with Iranian people around the world. And this is what's really going on and I'm recording in now my second album. So I think that, you know, step after step, people understood that this is what I'm doing. And in a minute, they saw the reflection of me on the music. And that reflects them as well. You know what I mean? Like, because I was so equal to my heart, it reflected them.
Right. And were you born in Tel Aviv?
I was born in Tel Aviv. My parents, of course, they were born in Tehran. Mm-hmm. And the minute I understood that I have so many layers that I built off on, that is my story. I released two beautiful albums in Hebrew, but it was strange for me to sing Hebrew when I speak and listen to Farsi, you know, all my life. This is my both parents that we're talking about that speaking to me till today in Farsi. So the minute I understand that I am a stranger, even in the country that I was born at, you know, the minute I understood it, it released my soul to do what I'm doing now. And in my shows now around the world, I understand that people identify with me because everyone has the same story. Everyone feels strange at some point in their life, the past of their families, the future that they are going to build in their life is it's built under layers of their stories. You know, it's you're not getting born as a full, complete person. You are building yourself from these layers, and these are my layers.
And I think there's something particularly special about speaking and evoking Iranian culture as an artist who's based in Israel. I mean, if you just look at the news, yeah, for example, from the last week, it's a very scary, intense political situation.
Yeah.
And, you know, do you see your music bridging the gulf between communities? I mean, does your music transcend politics, do you think?
Definitely. And as now I remember the other question you asked me, and here is the answer. The minute I started to sing in Farsi, and Iranian people in Iran understood that I'm an Israeli singer who sings freely in Farsi, I got so many great feedbacks, meaning that they were asking me to sing more and more and to talk more, and to until today when I'm posting a post story on my Instagram, there I'm getting like immediately feedbacks of, okay, speak in Farsi or in English, because we want to understand where you're going, what you're doing, what is this, what is that, you know. So the most important thing for me in this project is that I did it really naturally, and I didn't know why, but after I made, you know, step after step, I understood that I'm telling my grandmother's stories, who grew up in Iran. They were kind of forced to get married when they were 13 years old. They were, you know, they were babies, and they didn't have the chance to be the women that they wanted to be. They didn't have the chance to create. One of my grandmothers, she's a singer. She never sang. She never released her voice because she couldn't. So I'm making this closure with my grandmothers and with my Iranian family. And that's why I chose to call the project Naz, because Naz in Farsi is the polite, sweet way to treat your manners, you know, like there is no word, I don't think, not in English that I tried to find, and not even in Hebrew. It's a polite manners of being an Iranian ladies. And I think they created and they invented this Naz because the ladies, they could not ask directly from their husbands whatever they wanted. They had to use it with a lot of Naz and spoily Naz. Mm-hmm. It can be good in a way and funny, and it's bad because it's not... It's a little bit fake, you know what I mean?
Right.
So I'm speaking about it a lot in my show, and I'm using it in a couple of characters of my songs, and it's funny because it's funny to create, you know, a feeling of something that I really hated when I was a child.
Well, you have this a song on this record, a very special song called Nazi Nazi, and
yeah.
I don't speak Farsi, so from what I understand, this song is about very much about the idea that you just described, sort of the traditional idea that for women to get what they want, they have to do so very subtly under a veneer of politeness, and that the song sort of overturns this idea. And I think that's an amazing thing. I'm curious, have you gotten feedback about that song, or have you gotten feedback from listeners who have also sort of resonated, who that idea has also sort of resonated with?
Definitely. I'm getting feedback from women around the world, especially in Iran, that mentioning that looking and listening to a singer who sing and dance freely and in Israel, it's a go get it, girl. It's a great thing, even from men, you know, not only women that really complimenting this project and supporting this project. And my next step, you know, is to sing more about this complicated thing to being a woman in Iran. I actually follow this very little but very nice revolution of ladies who's taking off their chador. Chador is the scarf, like the hijab. Mm-hmm. You're saying scarf?
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I'm following them. They're taking pictures of them taking off the chador and releasing it to the air. And, you know, when I see it, I'm like, I'm crying my eyes out, because I know deeply inside my DNA that could have been me. And I have it in my soul, even though I'm free, but I have it in my soul, because bottom line is that I'm Iranian and I grew up with this Naz.
Right. We were talking a little bit also about the sound of the record, and I know that you collaborated very closely with the producer Rejoicer, who has his own Los Angeles connection, by the way, because I know he has at least some music out on the Stone's Throw label based here in LA.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think it's a very fascinating collaboration, and you know, even if you think about some of these songs that you've covered, the instrumentation has changed, and a lot of it is sort of electronic sounds, but you've approximated the feeling of this music without necessarily duplicating all of the instruments. How did your collaboration come about, and what were sort of the ideas that you approached when you worked together?
There was a real, you know, when I've decided to take these songs and to make them my own and release them, I understood that could not be like even similar to the classic original instruments and music. That's the reason it took me so many years to release them. You know, I couldn't find anyone who can I collaborate with, and to bring these layers, this Tehran, Los Angeles, Tel Aviv, and the layers of me and my stories to the music. But when I met Rejoicer, it was an immediately chemistry, because he understood what I wanted. And because he's a beat maker, he said, hey, let's start from the beats. And I said, sounds amazing. And then song after song, I knew exactly which instruments I wanted to use. He knew exactly which instruments he wants to use. And we did like one song together, and then we went on and on very quick to release this album. It was very natural to work together. And for sure, I can tell you that my family said, hey, Liraz, you know, here you don't sound Iranian. You need to sound more Iranian. And I said, no, I don't want to sound like an Iranian singer, because I'm not. I'm an Israeli-Iranian singer. I need my you know, weird accent, because this is me. I don't want the Iranian listen to Iranian singer, because they have Iranian singer that they know for years, but I wanted them to know me. So I kind of insist to stay with my own accent.
Are there other artists in Israel who you know, who you sort of feed off of, or who have dug into Iranian culture in a similar way or in a way that inspires you? You know, are there other artists who are sort of on the same wavelength that you look to?
You know, Israel is a very mixed culture country. I think that my generation now, because we grew up with so many many cultures like Iraqi, Ethiopian, Yemen. I think our generation is getting this music to another level of up to date, and I can say that there are bands who play like old classic Persian instruments, or a singer who can sing in Farsi, but it will be very classic, classic old songs and classic way with classic instruments. And I think for me, the thing that got the Israeli people to listen and to come to my shows and around the world is my story and my layers, you know, that came up with this music of the beat making and playing the electronic oud and you know, the layers of everything that is up to date. Yeah.
How would you compare, to the extent that you can, I mean, you know, I know that you work primarily in Israel, but how is being a musician or an artist in Israel different than being a musician or artist in a place like Los Angeles or somewhere else in the world?
In one word, tough. First of all, you know, I'm lucky that I can do it on my own, produce it on my own, and release it on my own, and I don't need a big, you know, record company to support me or to sponsor me. Most of the musicians in Israel need this support or sponsoring, because budget-wise, it's crazy to do it on your own. And tough, meaning that everything that I, you know, invest in, I need to gain and to release it again and to invest it again. Israel is a very expensive country, and there is no support for musicians here or for artists here. Not very much. And there is not a real time that I can take a break, like for 2 or 3 months, and to go to the studio and write. I have to work at the same time very hard and raise my two daughters and being a wife and being a mother and being everything. It's tough because we don't have the luxury way to do it. From the other hand, I can say that for me, I can say that I'm much more enthusiastic to do it and to send it away to the world. And I'm very, like every minute is so important and so precious. And I feel like, you know, a superhero sometimes. Mm-hmm. I do it on my own. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I feel like I just wanna go to the studio and go to Istanbul and record there, and go to Los Angeles and record there, and being free to do it without thinking, making the hard work at the same time. You know what I mean?
Definitely.
So it's definitely tough, but it's definitely fulfilling, and it's possible. It is really possible. Of course, I know that because I've been working in the U.S. and in Los Angeles, I know that terms there are much more spoiling and fun. But here, it is definitely one word. It's tough.
Well, I want to ask you one more question, and it's related to a couple things that you just said. But I was looking at, I think it was your Instagram, and there was a picture that you posted of from a Tower Records in Japan, and there were mm-hmm. some copies of your album that were for sale, a very nice display. And I'm curious, you know, for someone who's listening to your music somewhere else in the world, you know, in Tokyo or Los Angeles or Johannesburg or Buenos Aires or somewhere, do you hope that they take something away about Iranian culture? I mean, do you want to sort of increase people's awareness of things that they don't know about?
Yes, because, you know, this project really picked me before I picked him. And I think it's a big mission. And especially for me as being Israeli, and Israel and Iran are not in peace, unfortunately, it's important to say that Israel really loves Iran and Iran really loves Israel. And the thing that, you know, governments and politics thinks about each other is not concerning us at all, because the love that I get from outside and the love that I'm giving in, it's pure, it's music, it's art. And for me, being an artist and saying this word, you know, above Instagram or records or, you know, at my shows, it's the little that I can do, but I think it is so important. I had this concert now in Denmark, in Roskilde Festival, that I saw someone, he's holding something in his hand, and he's coming toward the stage, and he was like fighting the people to come across me, and he was just, you know, he puts a big flag in front of me, and I said, okay, this is the time that Palestine flag is in front of you, lady. Handle this with a big smile, because, you know, we have situation here as well as in Israel and Palestine. And suddenly I saw, I just realized he's holding an Iran flag. And I said, wow, this has happened because of this music, you know? And we afterwards we hugged, and I said, oh my God, you're from Iran. Let me just touch you. Let me see that you're real, that, you know, it's a dream for me to visit there. And when I see, like, as you said, my record in Tower Records, Japan, Tokyo, or Paris, I'm literally, I'm like a little child who's very excited, and I'm, the only thing I can be happy about is that Iranian music should be more out, because there are so, so many beautiful things in Iranian culture that got canceled from the revolution in 78, 79. The film industry is beautiful, but should be much more outside to the world. The music, the theaters, there are so many creative Iranian artists that I'm in touch with, that they do not have the ability to send their art to the world. They cannot leave Iran because they don't have enough money. So if I can make my Iranian art and spread it little by little, I think I'm doing a little step to my roots.
Well, you have such a powerful, wonderful perspective, Laraz, and the music making, I think, is unique. I don't think people can hear anything like it anywhere else. So, for folks who are just hearing it now for the first time, highly recommend that they check out your album, Naz.
Thank you.
It sounds like you have some music that's going to be coming up soon, so I hope people keep their eyes open for that as well.
Thank you so much, Chris.